Can our sexual relationship be a place of refuge, a place to be cared about, a place to be given to, a place to belong to my sense of being a woman, not just a mother, to our partnership, to our friendship? And that's worth sleep, you know, because that gives you rejuvenation.
Welcome to Conversations with Dr. Jennifer, a collection of interviews on the topics of relationships, sexuality, spirituality, and more, all featuring Dr. Finlayson Fife.
When sex feels awkward, dutiful, or lifeless, it can quietly erode the foundation of our marriages. My newest course, Sex Worth Wanting, is designed to help couples see what's keeping their sexual relationship from thriving, and offers a pathway to greater closeness and mutual desire. So to celebrate the launch of my new online course, we're offering 20% off for a limited time with the code SWW20. I hope you'll take advantage of this chance to work together with your spouse in a self-paced course to better understand how you can create a more intimate, thriving relationship.
Hi, this is Tammy Hill, and this is the Live Your Why podcast. One of the questions I often get is, what can I do to have more of a libido? I'd like to visit with Dr. Jennifer Finlayson Fife about this today. What are the factors that influence libido, and how can we improve? Jennifer, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
So, as I work with couples, I often work through the challenges of a high desire and low desire partner. I know we've talked about that before, but maybe let's just hit on it for a moment. Do you think every relationship experiences this dynamic?
Yes and no. So what I would say is that I think Dr. Schnarch, who I worked with for several years, would say every couple has a high desire and a low desire partner. There's real truth in that idea. But it has to be a little more nuanced than that, which is probably in any interaction, there's going to be someone who's higher and someone who's lower desire. Mm-hmm. But there are plenty of couples that are entrenched in that pattern and feel unable to break it. There are other couples that might have variation from one night to the next, but it's not a kind of key way of thinking about their marriage and their sexual relationship, that there's a lot of flexibility on both sides. Why couples often get really entrenched is because there's so much reactivity around the difference that then people polarize as a way of defending their sense of self. So I know in our previous interview, we talked about this idea that belonging to our sense of self is more important to us than being sexual. And so when you feel rejected and you're the higher desire person, often your desire goes up because not only do you want to have sex, but you want to be wanted, you want to be desired, you want to know that you're loved by the other person and found attractive. And so then you get more focused on, wait, do you love me? Do you love me? The low desire person, right, who maybe feels already that they don't belong to themselves when they're sexual, now has a partner who's like, do you love me? Do you love me? And that even if they occasionally have sex, it makes them feel like they're trying to prop up the ego or the mind of the other person. And then that makes them feel even less interested in it. Mm-hmm. And so then it gets in this very polarized dynamic that is hard to, it can be hard to disrupt without some self-awareness of how each is participating in that pattern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I know Emily Nagoski talks about responsive desire and spontaneous desire, which I think there's a lot of truth in that. Do you think mm-hmm. that it's more responsive and spontaneous than high and low?
No, actually. So I think that women in general are more responsive. That is to say, but that's different. See, I think there's something missing from the model. And if I were to talk to her about it, she might say, no, you just don't understand the model. So setting that aside, that I may not understand her model well. A woman can be responsive in terms of feeling arousal, right? And a kind of embodied desire, but she can desire to be sexual. Like, I like being sexual with my husband. She doesn't have to feel embodied desire first. Okay. So men, just so for those who don't understand, men are more likely to feel arousal in their body and then say, hey, let's go have sex, where women are more likely to first do some sexual things, have sexual thoughts, have be touched sexually, and then they start to feel that embodied desire, that psychological, I want to be here. That's in part because I think we're wired as women to track, is this a good place to be sexual? Because it's vulnerable to open up your body, both to disease and pregnancy. And so women are just wired to think about, is this a good place to bring my sexuality? Very smart of us, okay? The thing is, the reality is that women are actually, according to Nagase's research, are actually having arousal. That is, their body is being aroused more frequently than men. It's just not turning into psychological desire for sex as readily because women are pickier about where they show up. Now, that model aside for a minute, that's, in my view, a separate issue than I desire to have a good sexual relationship. I desire to do something tonight. That isn't because I'm feeling embodied desire right now. It's because I like going there with you. I like having this experience with you. So let's do the things we need to do to get there. So a woman can initiate as readily as a man can initiate, but not because her body's turned on, but because she likes going to that place. Now, again, women like going to that place if going there expands their sense of self, if they are able to receive deeply, if they feel like this person loves me and I feel a sense of freedom here. They're not going to desire going there if they feel like I've got a job to do and I got to orgasm or else he feels bad and I feel bad. You know, it's just like, who wants to go do that? I mean, I'd much rather watch a show. So, yeah.
Oh, I really appreciate the differentiation between those two. That makes a lot of sense. So what does libido mean, and how do you measure or define a low libido?
Well, I think what people mean by libido is it's a Freudian word, and I think it's, you know, what they mean is that sex drive, this kind of feeling that comes over me that I want to be sexual. And the thing I maybe don't fully like about the word is it's a little bit out of your control. You either have it or you don't have it.
Right, right.
You either have a high sex drive or you have a low sex drive. And I think it keeps us from looking at the meanings that would make that be true. Now, I do think there's differences in people in terms of what's natural to them. You know, I sometimes think of it in a different domain, like music. You know, I had a daughter who at age one was just so into music, and she could hold a pitch before she was age one. Like, she could hold a note. She just was very, very, and she would scream the word violin when she was 2.5. She now is a violinist. And, you know, that was like in her. And no, I wasn't because I was trying to get her to do that. She just was already wired up that way. You know, one of my other children, not at all, like didn't pay attention, didn't even seem to like have a sense of rhythm. Okay. So there's biological differences in sort of sexual interest and sort of, I think, ease of arousal. There's anatomical aspects of that, and there's probably hormonal aspects of that, and then there's psychological aspects. So there are differences in people. However, that said, there's still a big difference in how we think about it. And so if we start saying, well, I'm a low libido person, or I'm a high libido person, it's a way of not looking at what are the actual meanings, because I could get a lot better at music, right? I could get a lot better. I could develop more skill and capacity here. I don't have to just say I am one thing. And so I think that what we're talking about is whether or not the feeling comes over us. But to be completely candid, I don't have the experience. I mean, I maybe did more before menopause, but I don't have the experience of like, oh, my body wants to do this, therefore, let's go have sex. I mean, I have the experience of I like to be there with my spouse. I like creating that. And so it's being driven by meaning much more than by arousal. Now, of course, you know, we know what to do to get my body there, but that's not coming first.
Right. And I think for most women, it isn't coming first.
Right. Exactly. I've worked with women who've had like I never feel anything. I don't want anything. But when they start working with themselves, they actually have meanings that turn them on. They just haven't let themselves know about it, or they haven't been alive in the marriage. So it's not that they have no capacity. It's that the meanings they're in make desire a bad idea.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So with this dynamic that takes place in most relationships, and I really agree with what you say, what you tell yourself you are, you become. So if you're telling yourself mm-hmm. you're the low desire partner, I'm the one with the low libido, I'm the problem, you're going to mm-hmm. always be the problem until you change. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. oftentimes, I'm sure you do and I do, I have couples that come in and they just seem to have this battle going on, the polarization you talked about. Yeah. And so I wanted to bring up a couple of different scenarios I've seen in my own practice and maybe throw them out there and have you say, what would you tell this couple? Is that fair?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I worked with a couple a few years ago, and the husband says he's the high desire partner. His wife is the low desire partner. And he started marking on his calendar every time they had sex and the amount of time they spent when they had sex. Okay. and that's going to help the situation at all. So,
oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's for not.
It was like he's proving to her that he's right. So in that situation, Jennifer, what would you say?
Well, I mean, it sounds like I might say, you know, you and your calendar are going to have a long, loving romance, but not one with your wife. Your calendar is there to validate you at every turn, and you're the good one, you're the right one, mm-hmm. and when is she going to give you what you're owed? Well, the answer is never. Mm-hmm. She's not. Because her ego is like, why would I go subject myself to that? Because to even try is to validate his condescension to me, is to validate his judgment. Now, I'm not saying the guy isn't in some pain and isn't in some legitimate pain, but that's different. The way he's handling his pain is solidifying that this doesn't ever change. And he's doing a very understandable human thing, which is making his ego matter most, right? So he's saying, like, see, I'm right to have hurt feelings about this. He's probably not even saying hurt feelings. I'm right that you're not giving me enough sex. I'm right that we aren't spending enough time, and therefore you owe me. Okay, that could possibly get a woman to put out, okay? That could possibly get her to get the numbers up, maybe to prove something in the reverse direction. But this isn't about passion. This isn't about I love and desire you and I respect you. And that's the way people get together when they're dating, right? Unless it's an arranged marriage, they're getting together on the basis of desire. And so what happens is when we aren't getting the desire we want, the validation of it, it's then very easy to do things that get us a sense of control and superiority, but interfere with this very precious ecology of desire. Mm-hmm. And so I would say to him, you are operating in a way that maybe gives you a quick hit of superiority, but guarantees you will never be made love to again by her. So just waking him up to his own impact.
Right. Mm-hmm. Good answer. Mm-hmm. Several years ago, I had a couple come in repeatedly, and he would just whine and whine and whine every session about not having enough sex. And she felt like she was really putting out for him, and they were, the whining, he sounded like a little child. He started wearing me down. And I'll ask you what you would say, and then I'll tell you what I said, which probably wasn't very nice. So tell me what you would say in that situation.
Well, being nice isn't always the goal. I mean, being on point is probably more the goal, right? But yes, I think, well, I mean, it's a little hard to say without getting my own sense of who the person was, but I would probably say, look, I acknowledge your pain. Okay. I acknowledge that what you, where you are is giving you pain, but you are using a strategy that probably worked when you were a child. And mothers don't make love to their sons. Yes. Not sane ones.
Well, I asked the wife, you must be a pedophile. You must be attracted to children. That's all I can say. And she was getting so offended. And finally, I looked at him and said, she's not attracted to children. And so you better stop acting like one. Good. So,
yeah, exactly.
We kind of went in the same direction. All right. Yep. In this one, the wife is tired. They have young children. She feels like she's touched out all day long and doesn't want to be touched anymore. I'm sure you hear this a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I don't know what my exact response would be, but I think the work I would be doing with her is that she's relating well, they are relating to sex as a job to be done.
Right.
Because touched out, when children are touching you, they need something, they want something, they're taking something. That's not the only way to touch your children. And either you can touch them because you love them and cherish them and you're giving to them. But kids are often needing to be held and needing reassurance. If you're thinking about sex in the same way, 100%, you're just going to be like, at the end of the day, I want to belong to myself again. Mm-hmm. I don't want another job to do. Mm-hmm. A couple doesn't have to relate to sex. Now, and women are often co-constructing this meaning. So I don't mean that just the guy's doing it wrong by any stretch, but they relate to it as a job to do, which is actually easier to give a service than to show up, know your eroticism, bring your eroticism, ask and receive pleasure, right? That just takes more courage of self. And a lot of times we'd rather hide behind, I'm a good wife who's putting up with one more child at the end of the day. I mean, right. Now, so it's an easy position to replicate, but rather than, you know, a perfectly viable way to think of it is, I've been here caring for the kids all day, and can our sexual relationship be a place of refuge, a place for me to be cared about, a place for me to be given to, a place to belong to my sense of being a woman, not just a mother, right? To our partnership, to our friendship. And that's worth sleep, you know, mm-hmm. because that gives you rejuvenation, a sense of aliveness, and I'm attractive and I'm a whole person. You know, when you're taking care of children, you have spit up on you. You're not usually feeling like particularly like a woman. Okay, you're feeling like a mother. Mm-hmm. And I think you can relate to your sexual relationship as a place to belong to other parts of yourself that really matter.
Yeah.
And can help you do the other hard work.
Certainly can replenish you so you have the energy to do the work you're doing. And I love that you said, can this be about me receiving pleasure, that this touch is going to do something for me rather than me having to do more for you.
A lot of the work that I do with couples is around helping couples actually practice touching in a way that's really giving and receiving, not about getting or dutiful. You know, so a lot of times the higher desire person is touching with this kind of do you love me question in their touch. That feels extracting. Mm-hmm. I mean, humans are so good at mind mapping and communicating nonverbally that they can feel this is about he's trying to get me to want something I don't want, right? Or she feels needy. She's touching me in a needy way. That is anti-erotic. Now, again, it's often co-constructed, okay, because the needy person is often made to feel needy because they meet rejection, okay? But I think that learning how to touch out of a place of agency and care and cherishing and valuing is a very different kind of touch, and it can be experienced very differently. And to surrender into that, to let yourself be given to let yourself know that you are loved and valued by this person, well, that's much more intimate. It can be much scarier in a way to be open to that kind of meaning, right? Again, we sometimes prefer resentful meanings over the real intimate ones, but I could receive that here. And I do think ultimately in any happy sexual relationship, both are feeling joy, both are receiving. But there's often a dynamic, again, to the masculine and feminine intelligence, that the masculine is giving to the feminine is surrendering into that pleasure. And when that dynamic is alive, right, both have real pleasure. Again, like the masculine is, I want to be received and to be able to give pleasure. Men, when they often talk about their peak sexual experiences, they're saying, giving my wife deep pleasure, watching her orgasm, right, because of, you know, what I've done and provided. And not just in an ego-reinforcing way, that's too simple, but like I have an impact and I can bless her through my sexuality.
Right.
That's a win-win, okay? That is about both being restored and she's genuinely receiving and feels a gratitude for that kind of care.
Yes, yes.
But it takes strength to receive that and give it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it takes strength to get into the mindset where instead of looking at the touch as extracting or taking energy, that this touch right. is loving. Is that more just a mind shift for both partners? Do you have to
it is.
To think, if I'm the high desire partner reaching out to touch, and I don't want my spouse to feel like I'm extracting energy from him when I'm reaching out, the brain saying, how would I touch you to let you know that I how much I love you? Is that the all yeah. in the mind or?
Well, it's in the mind, but the mind is the thing. I mean, so that is to say you are actually touching differently. I mean, and you can't really tell this. You think, oh, it's just the same touch. But the mind is communicating in a different way. So, I taught the men's course, the Art of Loving course, and it was when I was doing the live version of it. And one of the men was confronting, which I do in the beginning of the course, of really looking at who you are in your love relationship and how do you relate to these questions. And he was confronting that he always touched his wife with the hope of getting her turned on so they could have sex. So every initial touch mm-hmm. was not really about, I love you, you are so wonderful, I'm so grateful that you're in my life, you're so attractive. It was with, I'm going to touch her and is this going to give me the green light into what I really want? And I'm sure she knew that. Mm-hmm. So he was confronting that this was how he related to her and that the sex had kind of gone down to almost non-existent. He said, quite a bit of time had gone by. They had an anniversary and he said, I'm just not gonna, I've been so much the guy who has expectations. I'm just not going to initiate or do this. I'm just gonna go and enjoy her company on our anniversary and let that be because I've not done well around this. A few days later, he was lying next to her and he was just kind of in this self-confronting place, really thinking about himself. And he was just thinking how grateful he was for her patience and her tolerance of the ways that he had been a brat in the marriage. This is just kind of the way he was talking about himself. And he just started to touch her out of this desire to cherish better. Not for her to feel cherished, okay? And I know that we talk like that. It's the wrong mindset because you're trying to get somebody to feel something. That's not the goal.
Right.
The goal is to be something, a man capable of cherishing. And so he just started touching her with not imagining they'd have sex because in fact, it had been a couple of months at that point that they'd had sex and it was a lot of, the relationship had been pretty fraught. And so he just started touching her out of this kind of real, making love to her with his hands mm-hmm. in the real sense of the word. Mm-hmm. I love you, I value you, I'm grateful for you. Okay, she had her back to him. She could feel it, okay? And she turns towards him. And she starts to, she's receiving it. And then she starts to touch him back. And, he said they had the best sex they had ever had because this meaning was at the foundation of it. And she could feel that he'd been changing. She could feel differences that were happening in him. But she could also feel the way he was touching her was not about getting something. It was about offering something. And she wanted that offering. She wanted that kindness, right? Women don't want to take care of men's needs, mm-hmm. never will. Women want to be cherished, valued, and appreciated. And that's when a woman wants to open up to that goodness. Why wouldn't she want to? Okay, our issues of ourself and do I deserve it, that can make us not want goodness even when it's there. But at least it's something that's pushing you to say, why not let this person bless my life? Why not receive the good that's there for me? Why not let them be precious to me because of who they are in my life? Hmm. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that example. That's beautiful. So, Jennifer, I have several different things I know that influence libido. I wonder if we could talk about each of these and maybe you could give some suggestions for what couples could do in each of these scenarios to maybe work through some of the challenges and how these things impact their sexuality. Medication is huge. When you're working with a couple and there's medication that's really interfering with someone's sexual desire and libido, how can you help this couple?
Well, I don't, I'm not a doctor, so I only have a couple of thoughts about it. I mean, one is that you can possibly go and talk to your doctor about alternatives because there are some antidepressants, anti-anxiety meds, that have less of an impact mm-hmm. on libido. SSRIs tend to press down on libido. where there's others that don't so much. But what I would also say is to be careful that the mindset doesn't make it worse than it actually is. For example, when I hit menopause, I think I was so afraid that this would mean that my body's response would go down. And because my sexual relationship with my husband has been such an important part of my life, that really scared me. Well, then the fear itself made it start going down because I was like, people go through this hormonal change and then they feel nothing. And so just that alone was like getting, I think I was also feeling some sense of loss around menopause and just the shifts of meaning in my life. So I think those were factors as well, but it was striking to me that it was becoming self-fulfilling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like my literal testosterone levels, like the doctor said, they were like almost zero. Okay. So like I shouldn't be capable of response, but nonetheless, like when I stopped like saying, you know, I remember my husband saying to me, we are going to be okay. Like we will have pleasure and closeness no matter what happens. And so for me, it like kind of alleviated my fear. Like we're going to be okay. And then my mind could work with my body. Now I have to work a little harder than I used to have to work. I have to maybe try a little more, you know, but I can't get over how much flexibility there still is if you really desire. Now, again, I'm not here to say that biology doesn't make a difference. It does. And you can always go and talk to your doctor about different options for you, you know, especially menopausal women and perhaps even premenopausal women. Testosterone can be a very helpful. There are things you can do, and I certainly would recommend consulting a doctor about some of those options. But the biology is the foundation, and then the psychology is really a powerful part of it.
The brain is such an influence in how you're going to move forward in every scenario.
That's
so
right.
You kind of hit on menopause. So aging and hormones definitely make a difference. What about chronic pain? What would you say in a situation where there's chronic pain with one or both spouses?
Well, again, it's a collaborative thing. And sometimes women's pain in intercourse has to do with the meanings. If you have gone through sexual trauma, if you think that your marriage relationship is about having to put out mm-hmm. and to keep a husband happy with you, bodies don't like that, and bodies rebel. You know, it's such an intimate part of ourselves. And so pain can be, and I just want to make sure this is one version because there's other reasons for pain beyond this, but it can be a way the body is signaling that a meaning is off. Like the body is rejecting, even if the brain is saying go forward. And so then it becomes self-fulfilling because now you felt pain. And now the next time you think about having sex, you're even seizing up more. Like, I don't want the pain. So it can be really valuable to look at the meanings. Now, I strongly recommend pelvic floor physical therapists who specialize in sexual discomfort and sexual pain because there's often muscles that are very, very tight. And they may be for other reasons, car accident, other, you know, childbirth, things that have happened that a physical therapist can work with to learn how to work with your pelvic floor, to work with certain muscles, and to learn how to relax them. I have a client who had pain all the time with intercourse, went to a pelvic floor physical therapist. The pelvic floor physical therapist taught her how to breathe in a different way mm-hmm. in order to release these muscles. She got better at doing it. And then she could even do it in sex. And she was like tearful when she said, I had intercourse and there was no pain. Mm-hmm. And she said, I can't tell you. Like, this has just been this thing that's detracted for so long. And I have just wanted to be free. And so it wasn't about, oh, I don't desire. And, you know, I don't want him here. It was just that there was pain. Mm-hmm. And therefore it became, I don't want you here because I don't want pain. And so she was able to work with a physical therapist and work with her body. And so just, it can be very, very powerful. The other thing I have had is that clients where when they do work with a physical therapist, and they're working with their body to relax some of those muscles, that they can become aware of meanings that the body has kind of been storing. We really want this mind-body split that I think is a fault. It's a Cartesian idea, but I don't think Descartes was right about this. Mm-hmm. The mind and body are, it's the soul. We're very connected. And so the body's often trying to tell us things about meanings in our mind that we need to pay attention to and vice versa. So I had a client who, as she was learning to relax these, she was happily married, but couldn't have intercourse. It was too painful. It was too tight. And as she started working to release these vaginal muscles, she would have like the word slut come into her mind, and words that her mother had said to her would kind of come into her head as she would release her body. So it's like a kind of surrender out of her strength, right? She's surrendering that control, the anti-sex control, as a way she was trying to be loyal to her mother, or to keep her mother happy with her, or to live down to an expectation of rejection of herself. And so as she worked with her body, it made her more able to look at the meanings that had been affecting how she related to being a woman.
That's interesting. I know pelvic floor therapy has certainly been a blessing for me. Stress and anxiety, high stress, a lot of anxiety. How do you talk about that? What would you say?
Yeah, well, so when people are under high stress, high anxiety, their body's not usually thinking, let's have sex, because it's in a state of vigilance and, you know, I've got a problem to solve and I've got something to do. It's also why it's difficult to sleep. Often if you're in that hyper-aroused state, you're in their fight or flight, not let's relax and sleep or let's relax and have sex. And, you know, sometimes these are temporary challenges and you just are patient with yourself and like, I'm not sure I can relax tonight. My brain is just going a million miles an hour. Sometimes it means I want to relax because I want to have the comfort of this and it might actually help me settle down, you know, by kind of easing into your touch and being with you. And so you can certainly look for the physical comfort of sexuality to help you with your anxiety. But if you have a chronic anxiety challenge, right, then it may mean a good therapist, maybe some meditation practice to help you move out of some of your habitual thought patterns that are amping up your sense of vigilance all the time, because it's just hard to have pleasure if you're always vigilant. And so can I work with it? And a lot of times there's meanings from our past that keep us in that hypervigilant place. Sometimes we're just wired to be more anxious and our mind just, you know, takes us on a ride all the time. But there's a lot you can do to work with anxiety and to get more able to settle the body down. You know, life is just, there's a lot of uncertainty in life all the time. And those of us that are sensitive to uncertainty are just going to feel it in our body a lot. And so how can I work with the meanings that are keeping me from settling into my personhood and into a self-acceptance? So I think it can be really valuable work.
Very valuable. Do you have any little tips to help couples have healthy conversations around the desire or libido issue?
Yeah, I mean, so my Enhancing Sexual Intimacy course is really a course of helping couples look at the meanings that are alive in their marriage through helping them become more self and couple aware. What is the meaning when I reach over and touch you? Like what's happening between us? What's being offered? What's being received? How do we tend to relate to one another? Because again, when you were asking, I think in an earlier interview, are meanings conscious or unconscious? They're often unconscious. We're just living them. We're not thinking about them. But if we can get them to a place of more self-awareness, then the couple's more able to solve something. You know, I it's one thing to say, like, I don't like the way you touch me. Okay, well, you're going to have a hard time having a good conversation. If you say, I'm becoming aware of the fact that when you touch me, my mind tends to go to, he wants something from me. And then I immediately kind of seize inside. And I'm starting to recognize that that is a meaning that I have a hard time turning into arousal. And then the husband might say, okay, that makes sense. You know, if he's taking the course, he becomes more self-aware. And he says, I can see that I do that. But it's also true that I often feel like I have no chance of an intimate relationship with you unless I try to get you to want it, because I never feel that you actually have stepped into having a sexual relationship with me. Right. And so they're at least they're not in the blaming. They're not in the, well, I would if you didn't do blah, blah, blah. It's more like, so even the husband answering that is not trying to, well, he could, but it's not so much about, it's not my problem. But yes, I think you're right. And I think this is part of the context of why that becomes so tempting.
Right.
Right. And so it's more like, yes, we're both doing problematic things. And we maybe are even doing them in a way that makes it really easy to keep it going. But how could we look at what we're doing in a way to shift something, to change the meaning? Because she could say, look, I want a good relationship and I can see what you're saying, but maybe I need to, you know, own my choices as I step in. And he could say, maybe I need to take more responsibility for the way I touch you. But anyway, that's what the course is good at, is helping you kind of see what you're doing, how to talk about it, and then how to shift it.
Yeah. Really introspective. So tell us about the courses. I love your courses. I've done a lot of them and I think they're excellent.
Yeah, thank you. There is two couples courses. Strengthening Your Relationship is about looking at your own developmental challenges. What I mean is development of your capacity for intimacy and love and how it's shaping what your marriage is. And so couples can do it alone or together, and ideally together, of course, because you want all the wheels of the car going in the same direction if you're going to change something. But you can go and look at your part and say, look, I keep doing this. And that makes it really easy for my spouse to do the other side of this. And so it helps you to become more self-aware. And then how to address challenges in a more solid way, a more loving way. The Enhancing Sexual Intimacy course is a similar framework, but around the sexual relationship. So what are we doing that's immature, that keeps desire differences to be expected, right? And how could we each grow to create something that's more intimate and loving and desirable for both of us, not about just managing the ego and our sense of self. So again, that's taking you through a self-awareness to know how to shift that. And then I have a men's course called The Art of Loving and a women's course, The Art of Desire. And both are really looking at what are some of the false traditions we've received around sexuality, perhaps, that have shaped how we're in relationship to sex. How are we relating to ourselves and to a partner in immature ways? And then what do I desire to become? Like, what do I want to change or address to become a more solid person, to be more at peace with my sexuality, to be more at peace with myself, and to be more capable of loving? Mm-hmm. And of course, they're just looking at different vulnerabilities that men and women have. And then I have a How Do You Talk to Your Kids About Sex course and how to help your kids develop sexual integrity.
And how can people get a hold of you?
Just go to my website, which is finlayson-fife.com, my last name, finlayson-fife. And then on there, I have podcasts like this where people are interviewing me. So that's Conversations with Dr. Jennifer. I also have another podcast, which is me working with couples. It's called Room for Two, and it's a subscription podcast, but I'm working with couples around sex and intimacy issues. And so you can see yourself in these patterns and what you could do differently. So it's a kind of a taking the application of the principles I teach and really showing you what they look like in the real lives of other people.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for being with us. And I appreciate so much all the goodness that you put out into the world. Jennifer, thank you.
Thank you, Tammy.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, we ask that you please rate, review, and share the podcast so that more people can find and benefit from Dr. Jennifer's work.